So how effective is email, and when should you or when shouldn't you use it?
Great question. So most journalists are using email these days. And if you're going to email them and they don't know you, your email should never be more than 4 lines long. You don't want to be emailing somebody you don't know an entire press release. That's not the way to go. Give them a short, quick pitch. Put something in the subject line that's going to catch their attention. You know, just say, you know, "Dear Joe, been reading your articles in USA Today, really like them. I'm an expert on XYZ and 123. Would you be interested in knowing more about blank," whatever it is? And if it responds and says yes, then paste in your press release. Don't ever email an attachment unless somebody has asked you for it. There are still a few journalists out there that don't use email and don't like email. You can actually figure out who likes it and who doesn't. There's a media directory called Bacons. And for about $500 a year, you can buy all the Bacons media books, which lists all the newspapers, magazines, TV, and radio. If you don't want to buy the books, you can subscribe to their online service and create an online database and find out that way the preferred way these journalists like to be contacted. But please, please, please never send an email longer than 4 lines to somebody that you don't know.
So at the end of the day, what are all the tools you need to be a book publicist?
You need several. You need your press kit, which we reviewed earlier, your pitch letter, press release, bio, Q&A, photograph. You need a database. You need to have a wish list, a targeted wish list of who you're going after. You need to have your media hooks, your email address, your telephone, and your smiling and dialing pitches already. Add in lots and lots and lots of persistence and enthusiasm and high energy, and that's what it takes to get the job done.
Can you think of a couple authors who are extremely persistent and their efforts paid off?
Actually, all the successful authors out there are pretty much very persistent. You know, there's no magic wand out there. There's nobody who can just snap their fingers and make it happen for you. And there are no overnight successes. Every best-selling author that I know or that I've worked with was out there doing what it takes for a good 3 years minimum before they ever hit a bestseller list. There are no overnight successes. Even the ones that were Oprah wonders a few years ago were out there for years before Oprah discovered them. So just know that even though it may look like it's going kind of slow, you're doing what it takes to make it happen. Even if you're doing cable TV stations, I have this interesting story of an author who got on a train from New York City to go to Connecticut to do a very small cable TV show. And while he was taking this 2-hour train ride, he was thinking to himself, you know, this is a waste of my time. I have a PhD. I could be doing something else. I'm going to Connecticut. Anyway, he went. The day he was supposed to do the show, the main host was out sick. So an associate producer was interviewing him, and he just thought it was the biggest waste of time. But at that moment, what he didn't know was that there was a Wall Street Journal reporter who was homesick in bed that day in Connecticut who watched the show and that was so intrigued with his information, called us, we were the publicists, and said, you know, send me that book right away. Did a huge story in the Wall Street Journal. It got picked up by USA Today, the New York Times. He did the Today Show, and it started an avalanche of publicity because he was willing to schlep to Connecticut to do this one small cable TV show. I've had several instances in my own life with things I've been working on recently where persistence really paid off. I've been talking to USA Today about doing a story on the spiritual cinema circle since March 2nd of this year. It's you know, the end of the year. Since March 2nd, that's 9 months I've been talking to the same reporter about a story. I never gave up. I would just call every 2 weeks, check in, always had a new angle, a new hook. Finally, they said yes. On Tuesday, the story's finally going to run. Now, had I just given up, it would have never happened. But I can tell you, after doing PR for 20 years, persistence really pays. And no doesn't always mean no. It just means no, not right now. So don't give up. Hang on to your dreams and know that with a lot of hard work and belief and elbow grease, it'll happen for you. I'd like to talk for a few minutes about two marketing programs offered by Amazon.com that most people don't know about but can get really big results. The first one is called the SNP, which stands for Single New Product. And here's how it works. If you have a book, let's see, the title of your book is Get More Energy Now. And you know that there was a best-selling book last year called Become an Energy Addict. And then there were four other books that were near the bestseller list that had energy in the title, like Positive Energy by Dr. Judith Orloff. You then go to Amazon.com and you give them a list of ISBN numbers of books that sold really well that are in your category, and you pay them to send an email blast to all of the buyers of all of those books. That way, they get an email from Amazon that says, hey, we know that you bought Become an Energy Addict, and because you liked that book, there's a brand new book that we think you'll also like. It's this amazing program that gets great results. I first found out about it when I got an email from Amazon telling me about a book called Purple Cow. And they were right. I did like Purple Cow, and I didn't really understand at the time how they happened to send me that particular email. But I eventually met the author of Purple Cow, and I said, how is it that Amazon knew to send me the email about your new book? And he said, well, have you ever bought any of my previous books? And I said, yes, I have. And he said, that's because I paid Amazon to do an SMP, a single new product blast to you, so all my previous buyers would know about my new book. It's very simple, but it's very effective. And you get to help Amazon select which books you think are most similar to your title. Now, there's a couple of caveats. In order to do this, you have to do it within 3 months of the publication of your book, because they only do it for new books. The cost for self-published books or small publishers is $1,000 per title. One of my other favorite things offered by Amazon is called the Buy X, Get Y. Let's say you have a book about relationships, and you think anybody who's buying Dr. Phil's book called Relationship Rescue is a potential buyer for your book. You pay Amazon to put your book on Dr. Phil's page, and then they're bundled together, and your book is sold at a discount. Another way to look at it was, let's say you've written a weight loss book, and you want to be next to the South Beach Diet. You pay Amazon to put your book next to South Beach Diet, and then very likely a lot of people will buy your book when they buy South Beach Diet. With the Buy X, Get Y program, there are several things to consider when deciding which book or product of Amazon's you want to pair your book or product up with. You want to think about, is it a natural add-on for the customer? So if you've got a diet book, is your book a natural add-on for South Beach Diet? Or do you have a book on how to have more energy that somebody on a diet might be going on? So you want to say, does this make sense in subject matter and in terms to the audience? Then you want to pick out a book that is on the bestseller list. And Amazon has bestseller lists in all kinds of categories, books, music, DVD, and video. And then you want to think about the timing. Is there a time of year where it makes more sense to do this? So again, if you've got a diet book, is January or spring the better time for you than, let's say, August? Then, once you're ready to do this, the cost varies. If you're selecting a book to be paired with that's in the top 250, the cost is $750. But if you're picking a book that is ranked higher than 250, the cost is $500. In the resource guide, I have all the details of both the SMP and the Buy X, Get Y program, including the email addresses to get more information and to contact Amazon to participate in these programs. One of the things that I like about both of them is if you don't have a book ready, but you do have an audio product with an ISBN number, this is one way to start selling a product immediately through Amazon. You can sell your audio as a standalone on Amazon and then do a Buy X, Get Y paired up with it, or do a single new product blast and really drive traffic to your product's page. I'd like to take a moment to talk to you about book tours. 5 or 10 years ago, a book tour was really the common way to launch a new author and a new book. And what that meant was you went out and you visited 10 cities, you went to different bookstores where you did special events, did a little talk, signed your book, and in between did a lot of media interviews. The fact is, it doesn't work that way anymore unless you're already a brand name and a best-selling author or a celebrity. Since 9/11, for reasons I don't really understand, people showing up to go to book signings have just dropped off significantly, and getting interviews for unknown names has become harder and harder. So if you're going to do a book tour, you need to really think outside the box and think about what can you do inside of a bookstore that will attract people to come out, hear what you have to say, and buy your book. I want to give you a couple of examples of some effective things that I've seen happen. Jorge Cruz of the best-selling book 8 Minutes in the Morning had phenomenal success when he promised dozens of military wives that he would get them into shape while their husbands were away on deployment. He made that promise to anyone who would listen, and it ended up getting him on Good Morning America. He created an intensive 10-week workout plan for these military wives in San Diego. And when he went out to do his bookstore events, he promised anyone who showed up a free box of high-fiber cereal, as well as his fitness tips. It worked out incredibly well because every time he did a radio or a TV interview in a particular city, he'd say, "Be sure to come out and see me at Borders tonight. I'm giving away free cereal as well as fitness tips and music." People love to come out for something for free. I found this out myself when I was on book tour for Hot Chocolate for the Mystical Lover. This was a book I did several years ago that was 101 true stories of how soulmates met and married. And one of the ways one of these women got married was she had this little piece of paper that you colored in. And while you were coloring it, you thought about all the attributes you wanted your soon-to-be soulmate to have. So I promised everybody that if they came out to my book signing, they would get one of these pieces of paper for free. I was blown away when 80 to 100 people showed up in every city I went to virtually get a free piece of 1 cent paper. But that's all it took. They wanted something for free. When David Wagner went out on his book tour, he took it to a whole new level. He wrote a book called Life as a Daymaker, and he invented this little trailer. Actually, it was an RV that he outfitted as a hair salon because he was a hairstylist who owned 13 beauty parlors. He took this on the road and in different cities did makeovers for military wives, for homeless women, for the parents of ailing children at Ronald McDonald houses. And it was such a success that he also ended up on Good Morning America. Luis Barajas, who's a financial planner in LA and also a first-time author, wrote The Latino Journey to Financial Greatness. This informative how-to book offered much-needed advice to the Hispanic community on managing money. Luis managed to talk the vice president of marketing of Sears into allowing him to give free money seminars at Sears stores all along his book tour route. He ended up speaking to literally hundreds of Latinos in every city that he went to and pushed his book onto the bestseller list. So what does all this mean? It means you need to think outside the box. You need to think about what you can give away at your events that's going to help the bookstores lure people into their stores to hear you speak. Now, how do you go about setting up one of these events? Well, if you're not with a big publisher who's going to do it for you, the best place to start is on the internet at BookSense, and that URL is in the reference guide. BookSense on their website lists all the independent bookstores across the country. And then you just get on the phone and you ask to speak to who's ever in charge of setting up the book signing events. Tell them who you are and why people are going to want to hear you. You send them your book and send them your press kit and tell them when you're going to be available to do book signings. Now, many of these bookstores set up their events 4 to 6 months in advance, so you can't just do this at the last moment. I spoke to somebody at the Barnes & Noble in Union Square last week, and they're now booked 6 months in advance, 6 whole months in advance. So you want to make your plans early enough so that you can get signings in the best stores. Some of my favorite bookstores are these. In Chicago, I really enjoy Transitions Book Place for spiritual and self-help titles. I also like The Borders on Michigan Avenue. The events coordinator there is really great to work with, and he'll do all the contacting of the media for you. In Northern California, one of my favorites is Book Passages. They usually get a really good crowd, and they try to make you as comfortable as possible. In Madison, Connecticut, there's a store called R.J. Julia. They've got a very attentive and very loyal crowd. In Bookends in Ridgewood, New Jersey, there's also a really great store. Some of my favorite bookstores and out-of-the-way places are Books & Company in Dayton, Ohio, which is about 30 miles north of Cincinnati, and Prairie Lights in Iowa City. If you have an African-American title, you might want to look for bookstores in Detroit, Nashville, and Atlanta. And some of the best cities to go to where there are a lot of readers are San Francisco, Chicago, Seattle, Portland, Dallas, Houston, Denver, Minneapolis, and St. Louis. Book signings can be a lot of fun if you get a good crowd, but sometimes people just don't show up. And when you're in that situation, all you can do is make the best of a bad day. Interact with the staff, you know, sign stock. If you only have two people sitting there, pretend they're both from the New York Times and do your very, very best. One of the most important elements that you'll need on a book tour is an author escort. An author escort is in charge of making sure you get to your media interviews as well as to your bookstore signings. They know their cities inside out. They know the media. They can take you for drive-bys, which are essentially going by bookstores, pulling your book off the shelf, signing it, and getting back on the road. And they can basically make your life very enjoyable and very comfortable when you're on the road. In the resource guide, we've given you a complete list of every author escort that we know and worked with so that when you're ready to set up your own book tour, you can hire an author escort. Here's the thing to remember about book tours. You want to make sure that you're far enough along in your career and have enough of a platform and a reach that you can send email blasts out to your own list to guarantee that people will come out and see you. If you're really just totally fresh and you don't have anyone to come out and see you, I would suggest you don't go on a book tour, but that you invest your time and energy into doing publicity and other marketing things that will get you more results. Because there's nothing more depressing than going out on the road and going to book signing after book signing when nobody shows up. You really need to know that you're going to have at least 10 people show up for you and come and listen to what you have to say. No conversation about publicity would be complete without talking about Oprah and the Oprah factor. A lot of people have the misconception that if you get on Oprah, then it's a slam dunk you're going to be on the bestseller list. Well, now, this is certainly true for several people, actually for a lot of people who have been on the show, but it's not true all the time for everybody. And over the last few years, the Oprah show has really changed formats. In previous years, Oprah was really sort of looking for herself, searching for answers, interested in everything and anyone that was self-help and human potential and personal growth. But there came a point where she was really full and complete and satisfied with who she had become and where she was at in her life. And it was about this time that she launched Dr. Phil with his show. So if you've been watching the show for the last few years, you may have noticed that there's almost no self-help component to her show anymore. She gives all of that over to Dr. Phil now, and her shows have really taken on a different twist. I'm going to read you a list of the 8 topics for the first 2 weeks of March. I just pulled these off the internet. First show, Pathological Liars Confess, women who've made up huge, whopping lies and then get confronted about it. The next day, Oprah's Wildest Dreams bus hits LA and New York. This is where your dreams can come true. Next day, Scott Peterson's sister, 33 Reasons Why My Brother is Guilty. After that, Diary of a Mad Black Woman. That's a hot new movie that's out. And right after that, coming face to face with your attacker. Next week, exclusive, The Amy Fisher Story. After that, The World's Biggest Baby Shower. And then we wrap up the week with Back from Betrayal. One husband, three mistresses, and the wife took him back. Women on the front lines of infidelity share the intimate details of their life. So you can see just from this that Oprah's into big, splashy, phenomenon type of shows, and she always loves her celebrity show and anything where she can give away a lot of stuff to the audience. This doesn't leave a lot of room for self-help authors and nonfiction authors, but there's always a possibility to getting on the show. So in this segment, I want to talk to you about the different ways different authors have gotten on the show, just to give you some history, and then we'll talk specifics. I don't know if you watched the show several years ago when Gary Zukav, author of Seat of the Soul, was on probably once a week for a year. But when Oprah first read Seat of the Soul, it was the early 90s, and she personally picked up the phone and called Gary, and the call went like this. Hello? Hi, I'm Oprah Winfrey. Hello, Oprah. I read your book, Seat of the Soul, and I loved it. Why, thank you. Well, I'd really like to have you on my show. Your show? What kind of TV show do you have? Oh, it's called The Oprah Winfrey Show. I mean, can you imagine? Gary Zukav had never heard of Oprah or The Oprah Winfrey Show. Now, part of the reason is he never owned a TV back then. So when Oprah invited him to be on the show, he said what he always said to everybody about interviews. Thank you, but no. But Oprah was persistent, and several years later, she was finally successful in getting him on the show. His book, which had some minor success in the late 80s, suddenly became the top of the New York Times list, and his life totally changed. Someone else I know got on the show in a very unique way. Dr. Jill Murray is a psychologist in Laguna Beach, California. And one day, she was watching a show that Oprah was doing on abuse. And she was a psychologist who specialized not only in abuse between husbands and wives, but abuse with teenage girls. And she knew that the cycle of abuse began in the teenage dating years. So she sent a letter off to Oprah suggesting herself as an expert on a show that looked at the origins of dating and abuse and teen dating abuse. And sure enough, she got herself on the show. She was the only expert for an entire hour on teen dating abuse. And after the show, Oprah came up to her and said, "You know, girl, you ought to write a book on this topic. And if you do, I'll have you back on." So a few weeks after that is when I met Dr. Jill Murray. We ended up selling her book. It's called But I Love Him. And when it came out, unfortunately, Oprah did not have her back on the show until 2 years after the book was out. But that's a whole different story. Many of you first heard of Deepak Chopra when he was on The Oprah Winfrey Show. That show aired in July of 1993 for his book, Ageless Body, Ageless Mind. At that point, I had been pitching him to the Oprah producers for over 2 years with absolutely no success. I could not get them to pay attention to me for anything. And then one day, Deepak was in Philadelphia speaking at a conference. And after he spoke, a man came up to him and said, "You know, you're really terrific. You should be on my show." And Deepak said, "Well, what show is that?" And he said, "I'm a co-owner of the Oprah Winfrey Show." It turned out this was Oprah's attorney and then partner, Jeff. So sure enough, the introduction was made. Oprah had already heard about Deepak through their mutual friend, Michael Jackson. And she said, "You know what? I'd love to have you on. You can pick the day of the taping and the day that it airs," something I've never heard her do with anybody else. She was on the show, the book took off, and although he was already well known in certain circles before that, his career went into the stratosphere after that. The final story I want to tell you is my sister, Debbie Ford's story of how she got onto The Oprah Show. When her book, The Dark Side of the Light Chasers, first came out just about 10 years ago, I had been pitching her show on a regular basis to several producers. And after I got nowhere on the phone and by mail and by FedEx, I actually went to the show one day. It was when I was representing Gary Zukav, and I went with him to one of his tapings. And I cornered one of the most senior producers in the green room. And I said, I really want to talk to you about my sister, Debbie Ford. And she said, oh, yes, yes, you've sent me all of Debbie's material. I know all about her. We will never have her on the show. Her work is too much like Gary Zukav's. Well, of course, what I really wanted to do was put my hands around her neck and strangle her, but I managed to resist doing that. And I just let it be. I knew it wasn't true. Of course, Debbie's work is nothing like Gary's work, but that was the opinion that she had. A few weeks after that, Cheryl Richardson, who was then a regular on the Oprah show, went back to the same producer, who was also her producer, and said, you know, I just went to a workshop with this Debbie Ford woman in Boston recently, and she's absolutely terrific. You should have her on the show. And suddenly, critical mass hit. It was like the tipping point. The producer had heard about Debbie long enough, and with Cheryl's endorsement, it paved the way. Now, you would think it gets easy from here, but it doesn't. It really took literally months of talking to producers and negotiating with them and getting them what they want before Debbie was actually on the show. But once she did get on, she was on three times, and that particular book has now sold over 600,000 copies. So those are just some of the ways that different people have gotten on the show. How are you going to get on the show? Well, the very first thing you need to do is start watching the show. Every season, the show changes, and there are essentially two seasons of the show. There's the fall season, which goes from early September to Thanksgiving, and then there's the winter season, which goes from January till May, and then they're off June, July, and August. And they don't carry over shows from one season to the next. So if you're talking to them in November and they're interested, but they're about to go on hiatus, you're essentially going to have to start from square one in January because they never carry anything over. So you want to be watching the show to see how things are shaping up and start looking for ways that you could be an expert on the show. Don't always be thinking about your book per se. If you have a book, you'll find a way to get that into the show. But look and see, what do I have to offer? And remember that one of the things they like on this show when they're doing self-helpy types of segments is real people. They want real people who've actually experienced whatever it is you're talking about. In the case of Dr. Jill Murray, they wanted to talk to teens who had been abused while dating. With my sister, they wanted to talk to people who had embraced their dark side and came out to the other side of the tunnel. In Debbie's case, they had a woman who used Debbie's work from the dark side of the light chasers to lose 60 pounds and to get in shape and to regain her self-esteem. So it's very important when you're writing your book and you're thinking about your book that when you're going to tell success stories of people that you've worked with, get permission right then and there to use their name and their story. I highly recommend that you do not do composite people in your books, because when the media is reading your book or hearing about your book, the first thing they're going to ask for is, give me some real people that I can talk to or that I can interview so that our audience can understand how this works. I can't tell you how many book proposals and manuscripts I've written where I just know that the people I'm reading about are made up or composite people, and it doesn't work. When you're putting your pitch together for the Oprah show, you really need to think like a producer. So how does a producer think? They're thinking, what's entertaining? What's going to move the audience? What's going to move from one segment to the next? So if you watch the show, you'll start to see the underpinnings of it, that in the beginning, they do a synopsis, they tell the story, they set the stage, they have some visual, some B-roll, a taped package, and then they sit down with the author or the expert or the real person who had the experience. And on the next segment, they'll start giving the tips that the audience can take away. So start thinking like a producer, and then when you go to write your pitch, keep it short and sweet and just a couple of pages. You can mention the book, but you don't need to emphasize the book. What you need to emphasize is that you're a great talker and that you have real people with compelling stories that are also great talkers. The Oprah show works very differently from most talk shows. instead of just having one producer for one segment, they have producing teams. There's a boss to the team, there's a senior person on the team, and then there are several associate producers on the team. And each team is always working on several shows, and all the teams are often working on shows targeted for the same date. Which is why I always tell people, when the Oprah people call, don't get too excited. No matter how excited they sound that they're going to get you on the show, there's always two or three other teams targeting the same date for the same taping. And what they'll do is they will pick your brain clean. They will eat up all your time, and you're going to give them your time gratefully. But at the very last moment, they may call and say, you know what? The show's morphed. We're going to go do something else. And there's really nothing you can do about it. But you want to be as cooperative as possible. So when they call, tell them everything they want to know. And I hope by then you've been media trained, because the phone call is your audition. If you're not upbeat, a great talker, concise, compelling, you'll never be on the show. Because as they're talking to you on the phone, they're rating you on a little card that's going to go into a database, because in case anybody else ever wants to talk to you, they can check their database to see that you actually have been interviewed in the past. And there'll be a rating there. Are you an A++++ talker, or are you just a B- talker, or are you a D talker? You need to be an A+ talker. So, okay, today's the day. They've called you. They're interviewing you. They now want to talk to some of your real people. Say, you know what, let me double check with them that they're still willing to do media, and I'll get right back to you. And then you call your real people and say, would you be willing to go on the Oprah show? And check with them on the story that you have about whatever it is happened to them. Make sure that they still have positive things to say about you and the interaction you have with you. Because the last thing you want is them talking to the producer saying, you know what, I did recover whatever the issue was, but it wasn't so-and-so that helped me, it was somebody else, and suddenly the show goes in a different direction. So you want to do the pre-interview before they do the pre-interview. But when you do talk to the producer and you are ready to give them the real people contact info, be sure to give them every phone number you have. Give them your office number, your work number, your cell phone number, all your email addresses for you and your real people. Because these Oprah producers don't work 9 to 5. Sometimes they work 24/7, especially when they're in producing mode. So quite often, shows get booked on a Sunday night. I know this from personal experience. And if all they have is your daytime phone number and they can't reach you on Sunday night, and they're taping a show on Tuesday, they're gonna call somebody else. So just know ahead of time when they say, you know, what's the best way to reach you? Give them everything. Let's say that the producers have called back and say, you know what? We want to have you on the show. This is great news. You want to find out when the taping is. Are they flying you in? And if your book is with a major publisher, don't be surprised if they ask to have your publisher pay for you to fly in. They know that the publisher is going to benefit. If they say who published your book and you're a small or a self-published book, just say, you know what, I published this book myself. And they'll say, no problem, we'll fly you to Chicago. Then you want to ask them a very important question, and you want to ask them for clarification. Am I going to be a guest on the show, or am I going to be an expert? And here's what the difference is. A guest is somebody who sits on the stage next to Oprah or near Oprah. An expert is somebody who sits in the front row of the audience and is asked questions or asked for their opinion during the course of the show. Take whichever one they give you. Don't complain, because I know my sister was once booked as an expert, and they told her she was going to sit in the front row, the first row. And seconds before the show began, Oprah personally pulled her out of that chair in the first row and said, oh no, girl, you're going to sit up here with me. And she sat next to Oprah for the entire show, which actually turned into 3 shows. So find out, am I going to be an expert, and am I going to be a guest? Now, as you get closer to the date, you're going to want to know, are they going to show my book? And they really don't like being grilled on this question. So just say to them, listen, I know that you know that I have a book. So, you know, just let me know. Will you be able to do a full screen on it? What do you think? and try and locate as much as possible. Don't ask them if Oprah's going to hold the book up to the camera, okay? They don't even know when she's going to do that. You can pray that she's going to do that, but you can ask, are you going to do a full screen on the book? And a full screen is when you see Oprah sitting on the stage next to somebody and the book jacket appears behind them on that gargantuan screen that they have. It's a very good thing. If you're wondering how you actually find a producer at the show, here's one of the easiest things to do. At the end of every show, they roll credits and they list all of their producers. When they're listing the producer that did that day's show, that person's name runs alone as the producer. It doesn't say today's producer was, it just runs, you know, it may just say, you know, Joe Smith. And it'll run alone, and then it'll say senior producers with a bunch of names and associate producers under that with a bunch of names. That's one way to get it. And in the reference guide, I'm going to give you the phone number and the address of the Oprah Show, as well as how to figure out how to email everybody there, because there's a system to it. And once you figure out which producer you want to go to, you will automatically be able to send them a very quick, short, and sweet email query. Two last points about the Oprah Show. Oprah always has attractive people on the show. If you're out of shape, get into shape. If you need a new hairdo, get a new hairdo. If you need new headshots, get new headshots. Oprah always has attractive people on the show. I don't think I need to say anything more about that. If you're not looking good, start looking good. And finally, if you can make the audience cry, or even better yet, if you can make the producer cry on the phone, you're a slam dunk. They love it when people are moved to tears on that show. I know one instance when they had my sister getting ready to do a couple of shows. They wanted her to work one-on-one with some people for a taped portion that would air during the show. And they were actually using my house for an all-day shoot while Debbie was working one-on-one with this woman who had some very serious issues. And all day long, the producer kept saying to Debbie, "You got to make her cry. You got to make her cry." And Debbie's pretty good at getting people to cry, but this woman was a tough cookie. And by the end of the day, she never broke down once. And do you know they did not use 1 minute of that tape because they couldn't get her to cry? So if you've got a story that will tug on somebody's heartstrings, start telling it over and over and over again until you can perfect it and get the waterworks turned on, because Oprah loves tears. One of the biggest clues you're going to have on how to get on this show is by visiting Oprah.com on a regular basis. Not only do they tell you the shows that they're working on and the shows that are coming up, they also like people to email show ideas to them. And they also ask, do you have a story to tell? And they give you lots of different categories. So you can literally go onto the site several times a week and be pitching yourself in a lot of different ways when they're looking for specific people for specific shows. Now, when you do this, you don't necessarily want to be mentioning your book, because they're looking for guests on the show. You can do that later, but if you have a compelling story to share and they say, okay, we're looking for women who were attacked in mall parking lots late at night, and that actually happened to you, and now you've written a self-defense book about it, you know, tell them your story first. And then when you're on the phone with the producer, then you can tell them about your book. But the website's an incredible, incredible resource that anybody can use at any time to figure out how to get on the show. So let's recap. Here's what you need to do. Is it easy getting on the show? No. Is it impossible? No, it's not impossible. You can do it, but it's going to take time and patience, and you need to be very, very familiar with the show. So rule number one, watch the show at least twice a week. If you can't watch it when it's on, TiVo it, tape it, DVR it, whatever you need to do, but watch the show. Get familiar with it. Get your pitch ready. Get media trained. Be sure you've got short, clear, concise sound bites to speak in. Make sure that when that producer does finally call you, you're upbeat and you've got something to say. You know, figure out what you're going to wear. I always tell first-time authors and new authors, you know, while you're getting ready for the book to come out, go shopping for your Oprah outfit. Have it in the closet. Be ready so when that day comes and they call you, you already know what you're going to wear and you don't have to panic. I know I wish my sister would have taken this advice, because when the Oprah people did call, She was so not ready, and I ended up FedExing her clothes from San Diego to Chicago because she went there with one outfit, but then they kept her for two more shows, and she didn't have any clothes, so we had to FedEx her clothes to her. So shop now for that Oprah outfit. And when you do get on the show, remember this. It's Oprah's show. It's all about Oprah. Oprah's the guru. So be deferential. Do what Gary Zukav did so well and say, "Yes, Oprah. That's exactly right, Oprah. Oprah, you're the best."
Arielle, what is a book tour and a book signing?
A book tour is when you go out on the road and go city to city to promote your book. And it's usually a combination of doing book signings, speaking engagements, and media interviews. And generally, it involves a lot of travel, very little sleep, and a lot of bad food. And I want to just sort of run down for you what a typical book tour day might look like for a successful author. Now, this isn't going to be for your first-time author, but a successful author will usually have to be awake by 5 in the morning to have a quick shower and eat some breakfast. Their author escort, the person who takes them around to all their interviews, will be picking them up at 6 or 6:30. They'll be live doing their first TV interview at 6:45 in the morning. They'll probably then run off to do 2 or 3 back-to-back live radio interviews inside studios. Lunchtime, they'll go do the news at noon for the local affiliate of one of the networks. They'll then have lunch with a newspaper editor. They'll probably get back to their room about 2:30 or 3, long enough to take a 15-minute nap, shower, and change. Then they'll go do what we call hit and runs, where the author escort will drive them to all the bookstores in the city to sign stock. Stock are the books that are on hand in the bookstores that you sit at a table and sign and sign and sign so they can stick those pretty little gold stickers on them that say autographed copy. Then around 6 or 7, you go and you do your book signing. If you're a well-known author, there'll be lots of people there to hear you speak. If you're a first-time author, there could be nobody there except your author escort. And then maybe you get to bed around 9:30, 10 o'clock, and you get up at the crack of dawn the next day to jump on a plane to go to your next city. And you do this over and over and over again, sometimes for as long as 6 weeks, to get the books out there and get them rolling. Now, the book signings, it used to be in years past that even if you were an unknown author, people would still come out to a book signing to hear you speak. For the last few years, it hasn't been like that. It's getting harder and harder to get people to come to a bookstore unless you're a known quantity and they want to come see you. But does that mean that you shouldn't go do book signings? I personally believe that if a bookstore is willing to set the time aside to have you come in, you should go. Now, of course, try and get all your friends and family and all of their friends and family to come and hear you speak. But if you're in the unfortunate situation of sitting in the bookstore and there's nobody there, make the best of it. Sign the stock. Go around and talk to the employees, because one of the ways books get sold in this country is through hand selling. The employees talk to the customers, and the customers are roaming around not sure what they want. If they've just met you, the author, and they were impressed and excited, they're going to recommend your book. And the front of every bookstore is the new release table. Now, quite often, the publishers have to pay to have your book on that table. But if you make friends with the manager and the staff, they're more likely to put your book on the new release table for free. So there's lots of good reason to spend time in bookstores. And, you know, it is depressing when there's nobody there to see you speak. It's happened to me many times. But if you can get yourself into the frame of mind that this is what you need to do in the beginning, go make friends with the manager, get to know the staff, because if you're an author, chances are you're planning your next book and you want to be able to come back the following year. So they're going to say, "Oh, he or she was really nice. They were really pleasant. I learned something from that encounter." So there's a good reason to do book signings, even if you're not a superstar yet.
Now, great speakers and great presenters aren't often born. They're usually made. Can you explain a little bit about media training, the value of it, and do you have any recommendations on who the best ones are?
Media training is absolutely essential. It doesn't matter if you've been a successful platform speaker for 20 years or what you do for a living, you need to get media trained to sell your book. And here's why. When you're doing a platform speech, you've got 30 or 40 or 60 minutes to tell a story. When you're doing a live television interview, you've got 2.5 minutes. And if you don't know how to sell your book in those 2.5 minutes, you've just wasted your time being on television because you can't count on the person interviewing you to hold up the book and say, "This is the best book I've ever read. Go to the bookstore today and buy it." So you need to be properly trained to know how to get your message out there, how to sell your book, and how to be effective in the 2.5 minutes that you have. One of my favorite media trainers is Joel Roberts, and there's contact information in the backup materials on how to reach him. Joel is a total pro on how to get your message in a concise, effective way that sells books. I've had Joel train me for every single one of my book tours, and he's trained almost every author I've ever worked with. There are other trainers that are also very good. They're listed in the resource section, but you wouldn't think of trying to get in shape without doing some exercise. Media training is the exercise that you need to do for your mouth to sell your book.
Arielle, can you provide some media training tips?
When you're doing a television interview, you want to remember to look at the person who's interviewing you and not at the camera. It's never appropriate for you to look into the camera unless you're directed to do so. And I can't think of any instance where they'll tell you to do that. So you want to make good, strong eye contact with the person who's interviewing you. And a lot of the time, they're not going to be paying attention to you because they've got a little earplug and there's a producer talking to them and they're going through their notes and they're thinking about the next segment. So you have to understand that you are there to get your message out. And it doesn't matter if they're not paying attention or they're not connecting with you. You have a big smile on your face. You sit up straight, lean forward, be engaged, and tell your story. When you're talking about your book or whatever subject you're talking about, do not use the words "in my book." There is no reason to ever say "in my book" unless you're going to give the title. So if you're giving information on how to take care of a child with a fever, you want to say, "In my book, Raising Healthy Children, I suggest," because you want to get your title out there. When you arrive at the television station, and at this point in time, I'm talking about local TV, not national, you want to come prepared with an index card to hand to the producer. And on this index card, you want to have the title of your book, your name, any pronunciation hints, if your name is not easy to pronounce, as well as your book signing information, if you have one coming up. That way, you can hand them the card and say, "Here's my information to Chiron." And Chiron are the words that go under you when you're speaking on TV, so that there isn't confusion, that you're not, you know, I once was introduced as Arnell. I was on a TV show and they said, "Here's Arnell Ford." I'm thinking, "Arnell, my name's Arielle." But I didn't even follow my own advice. I hadn't told the producer, "My name is pronounced Arielle." Some people pronounce it Ariel, but they called me Arnell. So you want to have this index card that has all your critical information on it so they don't have to be guessing or they don't miss it. The other thing you need to know is 90% of the people who interview you have not read your book. They probably haven't even read your press release. They're working off the questions that either you or your publicist have provided for them, which means you need to take control of the interview. You are not passive. If they say to you, "Oh, those are beautiful shoes you're wearing," instead of asking you about your book, say, "Yeah, thanks. And, you know, since I wrote this book, The Art of Raising Healthy Children, I've been able to buy lots of shoes," and, you know, make a joke out of it, be light and funny, but be sure to tell your story. Visuals are always necessary when you're going to do TV. If you can't provide them with B-roll, which is moving pictures that relate to the story you're telling, then bring still photos or bring props or bring something that illustrates what you have to say, whether it be a supplement or some food or whatever. Since I don't know the topic of your book, I can't really guess, but bring something visual to tell in the story. When you're selecting your clothes for TV, don't pick fabrics that are scratchy. They're going to snake a little microphone up your shirt or your blouse or your jacket, and certain fabrics tend to crinkle or crunch. So you want to make sure that you're wearing cottons or wools or fabrics that aren't going to make any noise. Also, you want to make sure if you're a woman that you're not wearing bangles. Bangles make a lot of noise. If you talk with your hands, you don't want all this clanking sound overriding what you're trying to say. And finally, be prepared for anything. There are going to be times when you're going to be bumped for breaking news. You probably remember the OJ trial 10 years ago. I remember I had Deepak booked on the Larry King show. He was sitting in the green room in Washington, D.C. He got bumped because of breaking news with the OJ trial. Deepak, being Deepak, he's always happy and gracious, said, "Perfect, I'll go have an early dinner and I'll finish writing my next book." We rebooked him for the following week. He's sitting in the green room 5 minutes before he's supposed to go on. He gets bumped again. You know, he's like, "Great, that's wonderful. I have more time now to do something else." So whereas other people might lose it, have a meltdown, be pissed off because they flew cross country and they're getting bumped, Deepak was always gracious and happy. And I swear to God, it's paid off. Not 2 hours ago, I was in a dressing room trying on some clothes, and the producer of the Larry King show called me and said, "We've just had a cancellation from Monday. Can Deepak do the show?" And he has been on that show regularly since the OJ trial because he was gracious and he was nice to the producers, and they know that they can count on him in a pinch to show up and do a good job.
So can you explain, if an author is going to be on television, what should they wear and what shouldn't they wear?
That is a really crucial thing. I suggest that before you go out to do any TV interviews, if you're not a fashion stylist or you don't have good fashion sense, you know, get a friend to go shopping with you or hire a professional stylist. The basic rules are you don't wear white or black on television. You don't wear anything with small patterns. And you want to wear things that make you look accessible, friendly, professional, and credible. You want to know what your best colors are. Usually for TV, I've never found anybody who didn't look great in some shade of blue. I always recommend shades of blue, pinks, reds, colors that pop, even purple. But you don't want to wear drab colors, and you for sure don't want to wear black because it really drains all the color out of your face. For women, you've got to make sure not to do hair and makeup or jewelry that enters the room before you do. You don't want to have dangly earrings on that are catching the light or distracting people. You don't want to have hair that dates you. You know, you want to really look professional. If you don't know how to do makeup for television, hire somebody to teach you how to do it because there's no makeup artist when you go to do local TV. You have to show up camera ready and ready to go. One of the things you want to remember when you're traveling is you want to have a good carry-on bag that has all of these essentials. You want to make sure you have your television outfit, your hair products, your makeup, your cell phone and your charger, some energy bars, water, the list of all the interviews you're doing, some echinacea to ward off any bad germs you might be breathing, a good book to read, and several copies of your own book. This is your emergency kit because if they lose your luggage, you're not going to be losing time by not having these things with you. Don't ever get on a plane without having all of those things with you. They're listed for you in the backup materials we've enclosed.
Can you describe a worst case media training story, someone who didn't go through the process and had to deal with the results of that?
Oh, I have such a sad story. We had a client named Brian several years ago who we managed to book on Good Morning America, a live sit-down one-on-one interview with Charles Gibson. And he was so excited, and you know, we were excited for him, and he went to New York and he sat down to do the interview, and the interview flew by. It was over in 3 minutes, and at the end of 3 minutes, we all realized he had never mentioned the name of his book. Charles Gibson had never mentioned the name of his book, and the entire interview was a total waste of time. Had this man been properly media trained, that would have never happened because he would have had the title of his book memorized in his opening statement. One of the things that we like to train people to do is to have an opening statement so that no matter what question they ask you, you have this canned, powerful message that's 45 seconds long that you're going to say no matter what the question is, so that even if the cameras go dead at the end of 45 seconds, you have managed to sell your book in a very effective way.
What's an author got to do in order to get endorsements?
Everybody wants endorsements. Well, if you have the good fortune to be with a big publisher, you know, you're going to want to ask your editor to help you solicit some of the big name authors to get these endorsements. And quite often, if you're with a big publisher, your editor will have some well-known authors that they work with, and they can just pick up the phone and say, you know, would you mind taking a look at this? Or they'll send the materials out. If that isn't the case, then you need to be really creative. First, you have to make your wish list and figure out, does it really make sense to ask, you know, Wayne Dyer to write an endorsement about your book? Is he the right person, or is there somebody that's better? You know, sort of analyze, you know, who's going to make sense to be writing a blurb for you. Once you have your wish list, there's a couple of different ways to go after them. I have found the people that have the greatest success rate go to book signings where these people are and ask them personally. And if you're going to do that, I would suggest that if you, let's say you go to an event where Wayne Dyer is going to be or Deepak Chopra is going to be, and you're going to get in line to get your book signed, be generous. Buy 5 or 10 copies of their book, because while you're standing in that long line to get to them, you're only going to have a few seconds if you only have one book. But if you have bought 5 or 10 books, while they're signing all of those to every single one of your relatives, you know, you can schmooze with them and say, you know, hey, I've just written my first book or my third book or whatever, and give them your 30-second pitch on it and just say, listen, I know everybody and their brother asked you for an endorsement, and I'm embarrassed to say, but I'm asking you to, you know, would you mind? And how can we go about doing that? And quite often, if they have a connection with you, they'll say yes. I've had so many people tell me that that's how they've gotten an endorsement, because that's probably the most effective way, is track them down at a speaking event or a book signing, buy several copies of their book, schmooze them, and ask them directly. If you can't do that, then call their office and figure out who their right-hand person is and be very friendly and tell them, listen, I know you're getting 10 requests a day for endorsements from Mr. So-and-so, but I'd really like to send, you know, a few pages of my book for consideration, or the galley, or whatever it is you're going to be sending. And when you send it, address it to the person you're speaking to, not to the person you want the endorsement from. So if it's Lisa Jones, address it to Lisa Jones. You know, write a note. Lisa, it was great talking to you the other day. Thanks for your kindness. Here's the book we talked about. And here's a pound of Godiva chocolates for being so sweet to me. And believe me, that will make a difference, because nobody else is sending her Godiva chocolates. So be inventive, be creative, and it'll pay off for you.
Ariel, if you had to give us a top 10 do's and don'ts, what would they be for PR?
Number one, if you're going to make a follow-up call to the media, make sure you've got a smile on your face first. A smile translates across the phone wires. Number two, know exactly what you want to say and exactly what you want to get. Number three, be authentic, friendly, and very enthusiastic. Number four, don't mail out a press release unless you have the time and energy to do the follow-up call. So many people spend so much time and energy writing press releases and putting them in the mail and then sitting around wondering why nothing ever happens. Just like in direct marketing, only 1% of the people buy something, it's the same in publicity. Don't mail out anything unless you're going to pick up the phone and follow up and call. Be prepared to send the same material out over and over and over again. No matter how well you think you're sending something out, chances are by the time you get somebody on the phone, they're going to say to you, I've misplaced it, I can't find it, somebody must have taken it off my desk. You know, don't sigh and heave your shoulders if they say send it again. Just say yes, of course, you'll have it tomorrow. Whatever you do, don't call any TV stations like the News at Noon producer at 10 minutes to 12. Try to be sensitive to deadlines. You want to catch people when they have time to talk. So if you're pitching television, don't talk to them when you know they're about to go on the air live. When you are calling somebody, listen for their state of mind. If the person sounds busy, call them back. Don't try to cram your pitch down their throat when they have no listening for you. This is one of my favorites. Don't take rejection personally. They're not rejecting you. They don't even know you. They're just rejecting this idea at this moment in time. Don't take it personally. be persistent without being obnoxious. Now, that's a fine line to tread because persistence is what gets the job done, but you don't want to call the same person over and over again, especially in these days when you have caller ID. You know, you don't want to be a nudge, but you do want to get the job done. And finally, become a resource. Find out what this person's looking for. Maybe they don't want what you have to offer, but you may have something else that they can use, and then they'll be indebted to you on some cosmic karmic level, and maybe someday they'll do your story.